I think this will be the biggest stock crash we see in our lifetime. It will be mitigated to some degree, maybe by governments fighting it. But I tell people, look, they've already blown their wad. They've already put $29 trillion into keeping this bubble going, so they don't have a detox. So now, what are they going to say now? Well, now it's going to take $30 to $50 trillion more to fight, because now they got to be, and that's what it would take, frankly. So I think there's no way out of it for these people, and they will be too little too late. And with the safest bonds in the world, you could at 50% minimum probably double your money in a crisis. So you not only just, that's why I recommend, don't be in cash, be in treasury bonds. And if you're an aggressive investor, if you're more like a trader or aggressive investor, the very best way to play this, the first crash hits the hardest in stocks. It'll be down 50%. Every crash has been 40 to 50% in 2 to 3 months. That's the first whack. If you can catch that, then you say, okay, I'll take those profits, and then I'll go around and get in these safer bonds, because it'll be less volatile, and they will do the best later in the crisis. They do the best at the end of the finale. The stocks do the best at the beginning. And this one might be more and faster. In fact, my best measure is that the NASDAQ will be down 57% in the first crash, and the S&P down something like 48% in the first crash.
Wow. Harry Dent, good morning to you, my friend. How are you?
Good to be back, Andy.
Yeah, it's really good to have you on. I'm looking forward to our talk. And to all my viewers and listeners, Harry can be reached at harrydent.com. Is that correct, Harry?
Yeah, that's where you can get on my free weekly newsletter.
Okay, fantastic. As I was telling you off camera, I've been a fan for close to 25 years. I'm just going from memory. It could have been longer. I've been a reader, an active reader of yours for that long. And I really, what I want to jump into, it seems very right now where we're at, it's very quiet. Chaos or chaotic is not the word I want to use, but it seems like that's the word I should use. We have a market that's going parabolic up, if yeah. you would, but the underlying economic indicators, if you believe those or not, seem to not be in line with the parabolic blow off top, we could call it that, in the markets. So want to get your opinion, where are we at right now, specifically with the financial markets?
Well, you said it best when you talk about underlying indicators. That's the thing that I've done best in my career. I mean, economists are not very good at this. I analyze people, not theories, and not national economies and government policies and stuff. And the fundamentals are, we had the greatest boom in history from 1983 to 2007. I was shouting that off the rooftops in the early to mid 80s. People thought I was a crazy man, because all people saw was the rise of Japan and East Asia and Asia. And like, oh man, we're going to be has-beens overnight. And I'm like, no, we got this big baby boom first and all. So that happened. But then in 2008, when the baby boom peaked in 2007, we started to have a recession, and it wasn't just an ordinary recession. And me and Ben Bernanke saw the same thing. That was the beginning of a Great Depression, because bubble plus big generation peak ends that extreme. And so we've been in extreme time since. So that's how I call this. We're in extreme time. People often say, oh, Harry, you're just extreme. I said, no, I'm not extreme. I'm a calm analyst looking at this crazy extreme economy that looks like the roaring 20s and the Great Depression. And that's where we are on a famous and well-documented 90-year cycle since the beginning of free market capitalism in the late 1700s. So this is not unusual. It's just most of us will only see this once in our lifetime, so it seems unusual to us, okay? The problem with this one, Andy, is real simple. We started to have this Great Depression, this great shakeout, this bubble burst. And the government said for the first time, hey, we've discovered money printing, and we've discovered we can just run huge deficits and nobody cares much, and float a bunch of treasury bonds since people seem to buy all we can put out. So they decided to just blow their way out of this. And by blow their way out, I'm the only one that's got a real number on this. $29 trillion since the 2008 recession started. $29 trillion. That's 1.5 times our average GDP over this 16-year period, okay? That's crazy to print that much money just to grow it, barely grow it 2 to 3%, and always be on the edge of a downturn again. So that's the real truth. that we have blown our way out of. And for somebody to think there's no consequences for just running 20 some trillion in deficits and throwing 9 trillion in printed money in the economy. I mean, that's like the biggest party in history and thinking you're not going to have a hangover. So this is what's really going on. And I think finally, two things, they've stretched this so far, you can't stretch it much more. Especially housing prices and stuff or something that really puts a real limit on. But also they finally pulled back. They've had the fiscal part of stimulus, which is running deficit. That's $2 trillion a year higher than ever. That's still happening. But the other half of it, and actually the majority in the past, has been just, the other part's been just printing money, raising the balance sheet, they call it, buying their own bonds. That they finally cut back. And to me, since if you look at bubbles in history, the nature of them, to keep a bubble going, it takes, you have to do more and more stimulus. You don't just put the same amount. It takes more and more. Just like if somebody's getting high on some drug, it takes more and more and more. And then you have a bigger hangover, and sort of thing. So we're at the point where, the reason they don't want this to happen, Ben Bernanke is the one that started fighting this with unlimited, and Mario Draghi in Europe was the first one to say, I'll print unlimited out of money, because these guys know that after a bubble like this, this would not be a recession, it would be a depression. And they know people are not going to like that. But it's also totally foolish, and only an academic economist would think you could avoid something like this and come out of it better. You're not taking your consequences and stuff. So I've just been shouting this for a long time, but I think it's finally going to happen, that 2026 to 28 will be more like 2000 to 2002, when the first tech stocks crashed 78% without even a notable recession. Okay, that was just a stock crash. And this will also be more like 29 to 32, where you did have a stock crash and a depression, and stocks were down 89%. So I think this will be the biggest stock crash we see in our lifetime. It will be mitigated to some degree, maybe by governments fighting it. But I tell people, look, they've already blown their wad. They've already put $29 trillion into keeping this bubble going, so they don't have a detox. So now, what are they going to say now? Well, now it's going to take 30 to 50 trillion more to fight, because now they got a big, and that's what it would take, frankly. So I think there's no way out of it for these people, and they will be too little too late. And maybe they'll moderate this. Some, maybe stocks will end up going down 60 to 70% instead of 85 to 95, which I'm projecting. But all I can tell people is the odds are greatly stacked against you. The odds, the longer a bubble goes, the greater the odds and the larger the crash will be. So the best thing to do right here at the end of an odd year, most stocks happen in peak September, October, odd year. Look back at it, folks. And this is a good time to get out. Just be safe. You can be in cash if you want to be super safe. If you want to profit from the downturn, you can be in treasury bonds, which are the safe haven. You listen to Peter Schiff. Sorry, Peter. Gold's going up in the bubble. It ain't the safe haven. That's one hint right there. And it's going up now faster than ever. Gold went down in 2008. It did not go up. Only thing that went up when 2008 was at its worst, and they cut off a depression in half, so it would have been worse, was treasury bonds. They went up 30, 40%. And this time, I think they could maybe even double in value, holding the safest 20, 10, 30-year treasury bonds, and the safest bonds in the world. You could at 50% minimum probably double your money in a crisis. So you not only just, that's why I rank, don't be in cash, be in treasury bonds. And if you're an aggressive investor, if you're more like a trader or aggressive investor, the very best way to play this, the first crash hits the hardest in stocks. It'll be down 50%. Every crash has been 40 to 50% in 2 to 3 months. That's the first whack. If you can catch that, then you say, okay, I'll take those profits, and then I'll go around and get in these safer bonds, because it'll be less volatile, and they will do the best later in the crisis. They do the best at the end of the finale. The stocks do the best at the beginning. So that's the sophisticated strategy. Short stocks for the first crash. Once you see them down, I'm my target 40% for the S&P, 50% for the NASDAQ or QQQ. Once you see near that, get out and then buy the bonds, the TLT, which is a ETF that holds 10 and 30 year treasury bonds, a 20 year average. The 30 year is the best. Okay. They're going to do the best, but you'd have to buy the bonds directly, which is harder. So I know that that's not a typical strategy. No financial advisor would tell you that. Look, I supported financial advisors for most of my career and was the biggest speaker in their industry for a decade. Okay. I love these guys. Not now. Okay. This is a once in a lifetime great reset. They will not prepare you for this. A diversified portfolio where everything goes down might do a little, might be down 70% instead of 90, but it will be down, and it'll be down a lot, and you'll lose most of your life savings. And after this bubble, we don't have the ever rising demographic trends. Okay. The technology cycle, which peaked recently, is still going to be down for a while. There's not going to be anything to come roaring out of this. In fact, I was talking in another interview recently, and people are more into gold. I said, well, gold will go down, but it will not go down as much as stocks. And gold will be a benefactor of the rise of the next great country in the world, which is absolutely 100% inevitable. India is going to be the next China for the next 4 decades. India most drove this boom. We were just the best developed country and benefited the most. But China was through 40 times in the last 40 years. India's going to do that. Indians love gold. Indians spend three times the percentage of their income on gold and jewelry than Chinese do and other people in emerging countries, okay? And way more than Americans and Europeans and stuff. So gold will be a great long-term investment, but not for the crash. So I'm not Peter Schiff, gold's your savior. No. Gold's in its last bubble. Stick with it maybe another few weeks or so, but man, if it gets anywhere near 5,000, I'd be selling gold like crazy, because my forecast would be it goes down to as low as 1,100 and then has the boom of its lifetime in the next great boom alongside India. So I'd be long India and long gold is the bigger parts of my portfolio next boom, but I wouldn't be long anything now except for treasury bonds or short stocks, very short term.
Got it. You know, you're the second really high profile person, I guess, that I've had that had a similar portfolio construction, and you're in really good company. Some of the guys that I have the highest amount of respect, Professor Steve Hanke, Dave Cullum, they say the same thing. And there's a handful of others that say the same thing. We have never witnessed a bubble like we are witnessing right now. And it's confusing a lot of people.
I can't even compare it to past bubbles. It's three times as long, twice as high. When people say, well, this is not a bubble, I'm like, what does it take? I can't even compare it to past bubbles. It's so bubbly. So this is a bubble. And folks, if you can, anybody on this entire earth for all of history since we've had a stock market, which is the last 250 years or so, anybody can find a bubble, even half the size that didn't burst, you know, I will bend down in public and say I'm an idiot, okay? It's just not going to happen. This bubble's going to burst. It's just a question of when. And now, by my measure, the most natural time for this to burst would have been at the bottom of the baby bust down slowdown demographically in 2020 to 22, which is also the decennial cycle. The first 3 years of every decade have seen the most likely to be in recession and stocks down. That would have been the time to happen. This has been delayed 6 years by $29 trillion in stimulus. And now, again, if you push a bubble bigger and you put more behind it, it can only crash more in the end. So now it's more dangerous and going to be harder when it happens. So I don't care about getting another 5-10% out of the stock market here. If we get that, I want to be in the safe stuff, because when it comes, it's going to come fast. First crash again, 40 to 50% for stocks in the first 2 to 3 months max historically. And this one might be more and faster. In fact, my best measure is that the NASDAQ will be down 57% in the first crash, and the S&P down something like 48% in the first crash.
Wow.
Not the whole thing. Just right away before you can even react and call your stockbroker and say, can you get me out, Frank?
Well, I have some questions on that, what you just said. And the first thing is actually a comment. You just said $29 trillion. I can't even, that is number is so big. I can't even, it means nothing to me other than that it's the biggest number I've ever heard of. I mean, how can you even relate to that? It's so big. I guess that's a comment.
It is. All I'm adding up is the cumulative deficits of the federal government. That's just the US, okay, in our country, and the cumulative money printing. The money printing got up to $9 trillion, and the deficits have gotten now over $20 trillion. They cut back on the money printing a little, they pulled back a little bit, but we're still running a deficit of $2 trillion, 7-8% of the economy a year. Well, just think about that dynamic. They're pouring in on average about 7-8% a year for the last 16 years, and we're getting barely 2-3% real growth. It's a bad deal. Would you invest in that scheme? No.
No.
So it shows how desperate it is, but it also shows, should show people, if you took that $29 trillion out, which is real and countable, of course we would, if you subtract that, we would have been on and off in a recession or depression for the last 16 years. We would not have had stocks at twice the highs they were before, and an economy that keeps growing at 2-3% and blah, 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 blah. And our housing prices keep going up. And your house, if it just fell back to the last low in 2012, for the average house will be down 60-some percent more than the last time when it fell 34% back to where it was before the cry. Okay. Just your house and stocks, just to go back down to the last low. This is the first crash, would be this 57% in the NASDAQ and 40-some percent. Yeah. So this is all you got to do is look. And then people say, oh, Harry, this isn't a bubble, because everybody's got a long list of reasons, because this didn't happen, that didn't happen, and nobody's drinking while they're printing money or whatever. And look at these charts. Again, can't even measure it. It's three times the bubble of any in length, and at least twice, if not more, any bubble in history. And real estate didn't bubble in the roaring 20s because nobody, very few people could get loans to leverage it back then. Housing just went up like a normal asset. It didn't bubble. Housing has bubbled twice now, more than any time in history by far. And the reason that's bad, housing will never go down as much as stocks. But people, most people own some type of real estate, and including an office in their business, and it's leveraged by mortgages.
Right.
My God, so a 20% down in most houses, 30 would wipe out most people's entire equity. They lose 100%, and more than that, they're in foreclosure and lose their house or office. So this is really serious in real estate. And so you really got to look at your real estate, and boy, the clock's running out on that. I can sell my stocks tomorrow morning if I want, and on the open, okay, in 5 seconds. I can't sell my house in 5 seconds, okay, if I've waited too long. So you better really look at your real estate. And most people will say, you know, because I usually speak to an affluent audience and say, oh, well, Harry, I own my home, and but I got this vacation house, you know, with a big mortgage on it. You know, I should sell the one with the mortgage, right? No, the bank owns that one. If that goes down, they're likely to either have to take the loss or to write down your mortgage just to keep it so you don't walk on them. You know, you sell the one with the most equity, because you're going to get all that cash at cash value. And when everything collapses, you're going to be able to buy a much bigger house or you buy a whole damn ranch or half of a state or something like that.
Right.
You know, after the crash. So that's the trick. You sell where you have the most equity. So if you've got two houses, sell the one that has the most equity, even if you got to live in your vacation house for a while, if that's what you got to do, because this only take a couple of years for this to mostly shake out. But also, the real quick, stocks last time, and they cut the stock crash off early, okay, year and a half early, but stocks took one year and 7 months to bottom. Real estate took a little over 6 years. So real estate is much longer to go down, much longer to come back. So even if you get caught in this in stocks, you know, you may get some, they may recoup some of those losses fairly quickly. Real estate doesn't. And you know what? I have a chapter in all my recent books called Real Estate Will Never, and I mean never, be the same in aging societies, because young people buy most of the real estate by 42, starter home by 28, biggest home by 42, and sit in it or downsize. And then they die. And the baby boomers going to be dying in the 2041, 40, nothing but dying. Then they sell their real estate altogether, even if they pass it down to their kids. That's a house they won't buy. So real estate's going to really is just not going to come back. It's going to die and just go blow. And if you don't believe that, look at Japan. Their stock markets come back. Real estate, no. Never.
You know, and that has been. Yeah, that has big implications, really, for a lot of municipalities and municipal bonds here. I see them.
Yeah.
Right. But there's two questions I really wanted to ask you here, and this is more of a gaming out a crash scenario. So what if the Fed does, or the Treasury or whoever, what if they institute quantitative easing again, where they're buying treasuries again, printing money again? Is it possible to go more of a Weimar Republic, if you would, as opposed to a deflationary 1929-1930 situation? Game that out for me. And then
if you talk, more people that see what I see, that see it's a bubble. Peter Schiff down here in Puerto Rico is the one I know the best.
I just had him on just a week ago.
They are saying exactly what you're saying, that this is more like Weimar Republic. I say, no, I'm sorry. That is not what this is. Weimar Republic was so extreme. Germany lost the war and was already massively in debt. What do the Allies do? We're going to throw reparations on you for the rest of all hell and eternity on top of that. Mm-hmm. So Germany had to print. I mean, that was insanity. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's stupid. So that was a money printing. What I'm saying, and it's 100%, I'm telling you, I don't bet on that at all. It's a possibility, but I give it, it's like 2%, because the deflation, it happens so fast. All this money's been printed on leverage, and it's gone into loans, which are leveraging everything. This leverage goes down so fast. Nobody will be able, they won't be able to print. They will print money. There's no question, though. They've been printing money. They're still printing. Of course they will. They will be too little too late, because this will melt down so fast and the banks will get in trouble. And they're going to have to be more intentional on just keeping the banks from totally falling down than keeping housing prices from falling down and stuff. So they won't be able to stop this. And if they do, they'll be able to, maybe home prices get arrested at 40 to 50% instead of 60 to 70, and maybe stocks at 60 to 70 instead of 80 to 95, okay? It's still going to be a crash. It's still worth getting out of the way of. And yes, we'll see what the governments do. But my problem is they've already, when I say $29 trillion already been spent to fight a recession, a depression that would have happened, so it didn't. They've already blown most of any ammunition. And so now think of the lot. Now if this happens and people like me come and say, this already cost us $29 trillion, folks. And then the government's going to be saying, well, it's going to take $30 to $50 trillion to offset this one. People are going to say, are you insane? Does that make sense? After $29 trillion, just kept it at bay, and now we're in a worse downturn than ever. And that's been the real trend. And I mean, every time we get a bubble and then a burst, we get more stimulus, and then we get a bigger bubble, then we get a bigger burst. We've always gone bigger bubble, bigger burst. I think this time people go, okay, three times now, 2000, 2007, 2025, we know what's going to happen. We're going to get a bigger burst, and then you're going to say we got to print $50 trillion. And next time we're going to say, screw you. We're not going for this. You know, let's take our lumps and get this over with. We could have been over this by 2010 if they'd have just let the 2008 recession go another year and a half. And you know what we did? I looked at the Great Depression. They detoxed like 70% of the private debt. Well, this time we did 12%. It was just getting going. Just another year and a half, we might have gotten 50% of the debt detox, and we wouldn't have a big need for another bigger and bigger detox. If we'd have just taken our lumps, we would have gone, we'd have probably had 15% unemployment, and the downturn would have been 2.5 to 3 years. Just another year, a year and a half, we would have taken our lumps, and we'd be over this, okay? Mm-hmm. And the millennials would be driving us back up. Now we've got the millennial boom, especially since 2023, and this boom's going to get totally decimated, and this generation's going to wake up and say, We hated you baby boomers before, now we hate you more. You destroyed, you not only blew out your boom, you destroyed our boom, you jerks. And so, they're gonna be right.
Yeah. So walk through me on the other side of the bust, if you would. So 26 is going to be a year of that's when it happens. Okay, so walk me through that. What should people do on the other side? So they're in cash. Let's assume they're in cash. They bought bonds or that you recommended. They're in a very safe play,
Again,
banks.
three strategies from conservative to aggressive. You just sit in cash, and now that cash preserves itself. All assets go down dramatically, and your cash buys you way more of everything. That's the conservative way. The second strategy is just be in not cash, but long-term 10 and 30-year treasury bonds, 30 years best, TLT, ETF, compromise of both. That will go up 50 to 100%. It went up 40% in 2008, by the way. This can be, so I'm guessing. I'm showing that they could literally double. Okay, those are the only thing that appreciate, not gold. Gold will just go down less than stocks, but still go down. And now you've got a big chunk of money to buy everything super cheap, and you could be richer than you ever imagined for the next boom from 2028 to 37 before the U.S. finally kind of peaks out altogether for a long time. The third one is you build against stocks for the first crash, then go into bonds, and now you made even more money. Okay, so the three strategies, but the point is either way, what you in to early to mid 2028, it takes about 2.5 to 3 years. The worst debt detox in history was 29 to 32. That was 2 years and 7 months to hit bottom for the stock market, and about 3 years for the con, a little over 3 years for the economy. So we'll see the worst by 2028, early to mid 2028. That's when you reinvest, and that's when you start to buy real estate again. You get back in stocks again, whatever, and get out of treasury bonds. You don't want to hold treasury bonds in a zero inflation environment where there'll be almost no gains and no interest on top of that. So that's what you do, and that you can only do if you have any money left. Most people are not going to have much money to invest, if any, if when this thing bottoms, because everybody's going to thought, well, at least my home will hold up, or something. Nothing's going to hold up in this one, because it's an everything bubble. Like, find me something that hasn't bubbled, at least doubled. And gold has now bubbled more than stocks since COVID. So gold is not as big a bubble since 2009, but it is a bigger bubble than stocks since COVID. So gold will not go down as much as stocks, but I'm projecting 60 to 70% for gold, 90 to 95% for stocks, S&P and NASDAQ. That is not something you sit through. And these are chip stocks. These are the best stocks. These are not the worst stocks. So this is serious. And I know people are going to say, oh, Harry's a fear monger. Look, if you say I'm a fear monger, I've been the most bullish economist in history and actually got criticized in the mid to late 80s for being too bullish. Then I'm getting criticized for being too bearish today, because at least people know we got a big debt pot. Okay. So it doesn't sound too outlandish to scream some sort of debt crisis. But in the early to mid 80s, with Japan and East Asia, we're taking over the world, and we look like the biggest has-beens in history. People thought I was an absolute nut. And I'm like, nope. Sorry. Who dominates the technology in Hollywood? Okay. Well, that's the future, not all these steel mills that Japan's taking over. Who's got the biggest baby boom in the world? Oh, we do. And they're just hitting in the 80s, and we'll be king in the 90s and 2000s. So it was just simple facts. This was no genius stuff. I'm just looking at the facts, and everybody else is looking at politics and whatever, stock runs, you know.
So, and we'll end on this. Talk to me about the reinflation. How does gold go into that? You know, in the first part of our conversation, you talked where the shift to India, and India loves gold. So I'm assuming, but I don't want to speak for you, that's when really gold takes off to the next level, correct?
Yes, which is a whole different reason. That's an important point to make. Gold is most correlated with inflation, and I'm projecting after this downturn and into for the last few decades, we've had only one spurt when we had extreme stimulus and went right to 9%. Low inflation for as far as the eye see, gold's not going to go up because of inflation. It is going to go up for one simple important reason. Indians are the next big thing for the next 4 decades, just like China dominated the growth in the world economy from 82 to 2021. India will do that from 2028 to about 2066 or so. And I can project their demographics out, and they're huge, bigger than longer than in China. Indians spend three times as much as the Chinese and other people on gold. So Indians will be the reason that gold is an economy is a commodity that does better than most economies, which will do pretty well, but not great. Gold should be the star of the commodity sector, and you're buying gold because Indians love gold for investment and jewelry. Indians wear more. Have you ever been to India?
I've never been.
People have gold in places with toes and nipples and belly buttons, and they are poor, so they want they gold is the best way to show off with a little money, show off wealth. Okay,
right.
So Indians are going to drive the biggest gold boom in history, and it's going to be a long term thing. So I would not buy gold here, like Peter Schiff's advising. You can maybe hold it another few weeks because it's in a final bubble like stock, but I would love to buy Indian stocks, tech stocks, Indian stocks, and gold for the next long term. But those would be the three features of my portfolio with other stuff too. But that'd be the three things I'd want to be sure to be in.
Got it. Harry, thank you so much for coming on. If people want to do business with you, if they want to read about your work, if they want your free newsletter, how do they go about doing that?
Yeah, that's the best thing. Free newsletter, harrydent.com. Go to that. You know, I have a normal website, but that's just information about the company. harrydent.com. You get push a button. You're on our free newsletter. I will talk to you every week. Okay. And that's an article. And then twice a month, I'll give a rant kind of like this, saying whatever I feel in that moment. And that's free. And if you never decide to get on our newsletter, it's free anyway. And we just live on, you know, 5 or 10% of people getting on our real newsletter. We don't care if we talk to people. I'd rather talk to more people. So that's the easiest thing to do, harrydent.com.
I'll put it in the show notes, both on the YouTube channel, Apple, and Spotify podcast. Harry, I want to thank you so much. I've been a longtime reader and listener for, 25+ years. I'd love to have you on again soon.
Okay.
All right. Glad to do it. Take care.
Thanks,
you.
Andy.
Bye-bye.